Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. It's Season 7, Episode 60, and it's a meaningless Browns game week, Dave, as the Steelers, obviously, we talked about, had the fantastic win on Sunday over the Baltimore Ravens. And the news since then really has been the Mike Tomlin press conference. And really, it's Mike Tomlin's response to Terry Bradshaw, which, Dave, you know, you and I have spent 10 years watching Mike Tomlin speak and say things and respond to things, and he can be maddening at times. He can be funny at times. He's not always open and honest, one would say. I think that's fair. But this was maybe the best thing I've ever heard Mike Tomlin say.
Yeah, I think he handled the comments made by Terry Bradshaw, you know, calling him a cheerleader guy and a good coach, not a great coach, perfectly. And it, you know, even when he was saying it and going back and listening to it again and then transcribing it and all, I didn't get the feel that it was rehearsed with Tomlin. I personally took it as you know, him kind of right from the gut, if you will, with his response and saying the term great is something that
which would be typical Tomlin, right?
Right. Which is typically, you know, well, I think you can look at some of the things that Tomlin says and say, man, he had to rehearse that. You know, you know what? I quickly going off on a tangent here, went back and listened to Mike Tomlin's first, several of the comments that Mike Tomlin made immediately after, the 2007 draft, you know, talking about players and all. And boy, Tomlin sounds a lot different back then than he does now. For, you know, for obvious reasons, he's matured as not only a person but a head coach as well. But back to what he said, you know, in response to Bradshaw. Another thing that stuck out to me is he never mentioned Terry Bradshaw by name. You know, but when he got to the part where he says, you know, talking about Bradshaw calling him a cheerleader guy, he says to me, maybe falls outside the bounds of critique or criticism. They probably fall more into the area of disrespect and unprofessional. But what do I know? I grew up a Dallas fan, particularly a Thomas Hollywood Henderson fan. And if you didn't get that by now, I hope you did get it. Of course, Thomas Hollywood Henderson prior to Super Bowl 12 said that Bradshaw is so dumb he couldn't spell cat if you spotted him the C and the A. So really,
yeah, Super Bowl 13, right?
13 or 12?
Well, they weren't in 12, so
13. I have my my Roman numeral math wrong. yeah, definitely a shot you know, back at Bradshaw there. And I thought he handled it perfectly. I really do.
I couldn't agree more. And I don't really think he was taking shots that were. I don't think he was taking shots at Terry Bradshaw. Here's what I wrote at the time. I said I thought it was thoughtful. I thought it was honest. I thought it was self-deprecating. He said, look, you know, I think we toss around the term great way too much. Basically said the only people who maybe deserve that in this game today are, you know, Bill up in New England, which is as the only nod I've ever seen him give to Bill Belichick in his career, and Pop in San Antonio, of course, Greg Popovich in the NBA, and said, you know, we're just guys trying to make it, trying to do a good job. And all of he talked about all of that, and then he made, I thought, a joking reference to Thomas Hollywood Henderson, which I thought was funny. I don't know if it's true or not, but I thought it was funny. It was a little bit of a zing at Bradshaw, but he didn't sit and take shots at Bradshaw. He didn't say Bradshaw was out of bounds to speak about him, but he said, as he said, cheerleader guy, which gave me a chuckle. And I think he's right about that. And I think that was the problem with Bradshaw's comment. He said, I don't know what he does. He said, I don't think he's a great coach. And, you know, I think everybody's heard Bradshaw's comments by now. But I think he was dead on. He picked the one thing that was insulting. And cheerleader guy is an insulting thing to say about any coach. And he hit on the point. So I thought just an A+. You know, it was funny last night. I was talking about it on Twitter with some different people. And I think most people enjoyed what Mike had to say. But, you know, the whole thing is you in this business, and Dave, you're in the business to some degree as well. You get attacked for anything you say. So I've been called everything from, you know, a Tomlin hater to, you know, all the way on that spectrum for the things I talk about that I don't think he does well to, you know, last night I was a Tomlin apologist, according to some people. So is what it is, but A+ for Mike in my book.
Yeah, we're both Roethlisberger haters and apologists as well. So I'm not sure how that's possible. But look, I mean, is he a emotional coach on the sideline? Is he a quote unquote player's coach? I think this. To some degree, he's a player's coach, probably depending on who the player is that you ask. Does he play favorites in the locker room? I think there's been, you know, some kind of proof of that from some players in the past, you know, about that. But to just call him a cheerleader.
I don't know that I would agree with that. I'll just say that when a player's coach, yes, because like Mike Sullivan of the Penguins is a player's coach because he's honest and straightforward and absolutely lets you know where you stand. And I think that's what players want.
Yeah, but I think in the past, and I don't have the quotes in front of me. I didn't think I would need them in this. But I think in the past, it's been recognized by either Tomlin or players that how he handles players depends on who those players are. Now, of course, you'd say, well, yeah, you shouldn't treat everybody. You know, everybody has different personalities that you deal with. You know, so but in so many words, what I'm trying to say is he is, you know, to some extent, he is a player's coach, and he is a very emotional coach on the sideline as well, too. Now, you can debate all day long whether or not you think he's a great coach or a good coach and provide good reasons for both. But, you know, one thing that came out on the Steelers Twitter feed yesterday that caught my eye is the amount of wins that Tomlin now has in relation to he's tied with Tony Dungy now, right?
What'd you have, 103 in 10 years or something like that?
Yeah, right. Yeah. And, of course, we'll see how it progresses from here. But, you know, to even be mentioned in a stat related to a guy like Tony Dungy, and we all know where Tony Dungy is at now, says something, I think. And yes, Mike Tomlin has his warts. Nobody's gonna run from that. David likes to hit on his clock management. People like to get on the gut decisions, if you will, that Tomlin makes and everything that goes along with that. But the man he wins. Okay. I mean, his teams have lost to teams with sub 500 records, you know, over the years. And, you know, but look, I mean, if he was to be shuttled out of Pittsburgh, he'd be coaching somewhere else in a hurry.
Yeah, tomorrow. Okay. So the other things out of the press conference, Dave, the injury report was, I think, as expected. I know there are some people in the media who ran with the Ladarius Green still in concussion protocol, ran with it pretty hard and kind of raised people's level of concern. Let me tell it like this. Green wasn't listed as out when the Steelers, you know, filed their final injury report on Friday. That's the most telling thing you can have. From then, I don't know that Ladarius Green has had a medical evaluation or gone through the physical exertion that you would go through on the normal practice week, because he didn't practice from then on. The Steelers had a walkthrough Saturday. They played the game Sunday, which he obviously didn't play. He may have done something on Monday, but then Tuesday's an off day, so he wouldn't have been cleared from protocol. I'm not overly concerned about Ladarius Green. Maybe it's another couple days till he's cleared, but I certainly expect that he will be available when the Steelers play their playoff game. The question is, if he clears today or he clears tomorrow, do the Steelers want to have him get some reps just because he's only played half the season, and you're not making him more susceptible to another concussion by putting him in there if he's cleared the protocol. So that would be the only guy for me that's a bit of a question mark. We didn't hear a lot about Sammy Coates and what his status was, but it sounds like the guys we expect to be inactive who are healthy would be Ben, A.B., Le'Veon Bell, and Marquise Pouncey. And then I think the guys who are injured would be Stephon Tuitt for sure. And then we'll kind of look at the rest of the group, whether it's Robert Golden because he's unable to go, whether it's Ladarius Green, and then, you know, pick whom else you want, Sammy Coates, whoever else is unable to go. But it sounds like, Dave, the big four offensively aren't going to play.
Yeah, and I would I hope Tomlin writes the name of Ladarius Green and Stephon Tuitt. I think it's nearly guaranteed that he'll be on the inactive list. I hope Green's name is on there as well too, just so there's no tendency to play him regardless of what happens this week in practice. I would go ahead and sit Green and Tuitt along with the big four, and you know, we'll see what happens with Sammy Coates and Robert Golden. And just because the inactive list is limited to seven players, there's going to be probably one or two more that probably not going to play in that game as well. And the only bad thing about it, do you think rosters should be expanded? Look, I think they should be expanded, period, from 53, or more than anything, the game day rosters expanded to 53. But during playoffs, should they be allowed to expand game day rosters? Or, you know, is that something that's going to be out of the question?
I wouldn't think so. You know, you get there with this process. I don't like what Major League Baseball does in September for expanding rosters down the playoff stretch. You play for 5 months a certain way, and then you change the rules. I think it's ridiculous. So I wouldn't want to see them change anything from how they do it in the regular season.
Pouncey, obviously, not going to play. And we talked about this on the last podcast as well, too. Unfortunately, some of these guys on the offensive line are going to play. And I think
a lot of guys are going to play in the game. And as Mike said, I like how he said it. He said, if you're dressed, it's business as usual. And that's how they should approach it. You don't want anybody kind of going through it halfway. Go out and play. Get your work in. And beat the Browns. You know, as we talked about last on Monday, it's a big game for Landry Jones. He's a free agent. He's going to want to put things on tape. The guys are. I don't have any doubt that the guys in the offensive line will give 100%. I don't have any doubt that everybody's going to give 100%. If they're playing, they're playing. They're going to, you know, go out and play football as any of us would. You know, you love the game. You want to go out and play. You're getting paid to do it. The young guys are dying to get the opportunity. So I'm not really worried about it. And the four guys aren't going to play. Two, it's not going to play, and the rest, go get them.
Yeah, I think I'd be quick with the hook, though, with guys like Shazier and Timmons if I can. I'd have them dressed in case maybe they have to go back in, but I'm not too concerned about seeing much of those two players in this game. However, I do think probably both of them are going to start. I think I'd be a little bit careful with Mike Mitchell as well, too, being as how he had to leave that game against the Ravens momentarily with back strain or something like that. But yeah, you know, unfortunately, because of the amount of players that you're allowed to dress, and because you need players to play special teams and position lines being as short as they are, there are going to be a lot of players that play, you know, more than just a little bit.
Yeah. So I don't think there was anything else in the injury report, Dave. Then in terms of other things, I was curious, and I asked Mike about the play that won the game and if the play was designed to be in the end zone. And of course, Antonio Brown deserves all the congratulations in the world, and it'll be a play that goes down in Steelers lore. But at the same time, let's be realistic about it. There's a possibility that the Steelers wouldn't have gotten another playoff. Now, I know Ben on his radio show said we would have run up and run a quarterback sneak. I don't think Ben had that called in the huddle. I think Ben looks and says the ball would be at the nose of the goal line. The nose of the ball would be at the goal line. So, you know, that's what we do. I'd get them up there as fast as possible, and rather than spike it, you know, I'd try and get in there, and we got a chance to make it. That's nice to say. Tomlin said there wasn't anything called. You know, we'll never know what they would have done. which I think is probably the right answer. But I do feel like there is a moment where you say, look, if we get in this position again, guys, this worked and it's a good play, but realize that's a situation where we want to be able to get three plays off there. We want to, if that's incomplete, you know, okay, we get another crack at winning the game. We throw it in the end zone again. We get another crack at winning the game. And worst case scenario, we get a field goal because we can run three plays in 14 seconds. But if that play right there gets stopped, there's a chance we don't get another play off, and that's the end of the game, and that's not what we're looking for. And so I thought Mike danced around that reasonably well, saying, you know, we won. This is a play that's worked for us. We got one to get the ball in the hands of our best player. We did that, and it worked. Okay. And that's fine. He was then pressed on it by somebody else saying, you know, is Antonio Brown supposed to run it a yard deep in the end zone? And he didn't really give on that either. But the answer is that is what it should be. You don't – again, Dave, can you imagine the narrative, how different our conversation would be, how different the comments by Terry Bradshaw would be looked at if the Steelers lost that game without getting another playoff?
Yeah, but on the flip side, like Roethlisberger said during his radio show, does it matter? You can what if every single play of a football game. And I mean, I understand why the discussion is there. Look, I mean, the emotion is gone. The play happened. We're over that. We've enjoyed that. And you know, but why does all every time it has to go to the what if? I admitted, you know, I think in that last podcast that I did my best to not immediately think throughout that night what would have happened if, you know, Antonio Brown doesn't stretch that football over. I mean, you can what if a lot of stuff, and I mean, is there a learn? Would Antonio Brown have been able to caught the pass had he run a yard deeper in the end zone? You know, so I don't know. I personally, I just don't think we should spend much time talking about the what if.
Well, the reason I do this, and this is the way I live my life when thinking about things, it's when you analyze things, are you process oriented or are you results oriented? And it's the whole thing about, you know, how do you, because something works, do you just ignore the process? You might get lucky it worked, and you might get unlucky it didn't work. But if you get the process right, you're more likely to get it right the next time. So make sure you know the process. Make sure your process is right, and you're likely to be successful. It's like hitting on 20. You can hit on 20 on blackjack and win the hand and say, well, who cares? I won the hand, but your process isn't very good. If you do it a lot, you're probably going to lose way more often than you win. So get the process right. Get in a position where you get three plays off. That worked that time. If it hadn't, you know, it did. And we don't have to talk about it. But it's if they get in that situation again, which they probably are likely to do at some point during Bradshaw and Tomlin's tenure, you want to make sure you get three – are able to get three plays off.
Well, look, how many plays has Roethlisberger made during his career where the process wasn't right, you know?
No question. And he's going to make more where the process isn't right. But it's, you know, it's we can look around the NFL at guys screwing things up, whether, you know, where and that's what Mondays are about on national television and talk radio. And you get guys around the league screwing things up that they shouldn't have screwed up. But this one, I'm not saying they screwed up and run the play they ran. I'm saying that you want to make sure that ball's in the end zone so you can run it again. I mean, Matt Williamson said he thought no chance they get another playoff. I'd say it's at least 50-50 to get another playoff.
Yeah, let's see. They snapped it, what was it, 13 seconds? Is that right?
14-9, yeah.
I mean, if he gets stood up there and then, I mean, who knows what's going to happen to the football.
The question is, would they review the play if it hadn't been called a touchdown? Let's say he... I mean, I don't know. We can say the whole season turns on whether AB stretches his arm out or not, right? If he doesn't do that, it probably is not called a touchdown. And then do they review it there? I'm guessing they review it, but that means the guys up in the booth have to react pretty quickly. So, well, you know, okay, we can go on from there. Was there other things in the press conference, Dave? What jumped out at you?
Oh, I'm trying to play it back through my head right now, some of the things. You know, he made sure to praise Johnny Maxey and DeMarcus Ayers again for them sticking their hands in the pile in this game. I don't know. What else? What else stuck out?
Did it surprise you that he said he didn't think they're going to have to do kickoffs, so he didn't spend much time thinking about it?
Say again.
Return kicks. When I asked him about Kobe Hamilton and
Pittsburgh. Yeah, a little bit. I mean, with a guy like Tucker, you would expect most of them to be anyway, but who knows? Maybe the special teams coach for the Ravens looked back there and says it's only Fitzgerald, Toussaint. And
I'm wondering if that's really the case. I think it might well have been.
Possibly. Now the question is, you know, look, I mean, we've talked about this for most of the season with the return game. Is it time to put DeMarcus Ayers back there? I mean, if Tomlin's going to let a guy like Kobe Hamilton get back there, you know, why wouldn't you let a guy like DeMarcus Ayers get back there with Fitzgerald Toussaint? This would be the perfect week to do that, right?
Absolutely.
If they don't put Justin Gilbert or DeMarcus Ayers back there against the Browns, when are they going to do it?
Exactly. To get Toussaint out of – Toussaint, by the way, the Steelers have returned 25 kickoffs. The quote-unquote off-returners returned 13 of them. He's taken 6 of them out of the end zone. He's gotten to the 25 once. He's gotten to past the 25 once. 4 times he's been 20 or inside. Kneel the damn ball down if it's in the end zone.
Yeah, yeah. No, you're not a threat to take those back, fellas. Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely. I mean, they're going to give you the free 25-yard line. You know, I guess it'd be – well, I mean, every player's different and situation's different, but I wonder how many are actually returned past the 25-yard line that are caught, say, 3 yards deep in the end zone. So, you know, essentially a 28-yard return, if you will. So, yeah, those guys got to know the situation for sure. And but yeah, you know, look, I mean, if there's one thing, there's not much to get excited about when it comes to this game against the Browns, but I think we just hit on one of those things. put DeMarcus Ayers out there, let him return punts too. Well, he's gonna have to, right? Or Eli or
yeah,
something.
I think AB will be down, so I think so.
I mean, so that just opened up something for me to write about today too. Good job. You know, most definitely, we'll see some different returners back there, and maybe they give us something to be excited about potentially in the playoffs as well.
Hey, Steeler fans, you know, mortgage rates are currently near all-time lows. And if you're looking to buy your first home, upgrade, downsize, invest, purchase a vacation home, or refinance, contact our buddy Craig Oxen from First Advantage Mortgage. Craig's a lifelong Steeler fan and a Pittsburgh native, and he's a nationally recognized lender that would love the opportunity to help out terrible podcast listeners. You can call Craig Oxen today at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. Email Craig at craig@blackandgoldlending.com or apply online at www.blackandgoldlending.com. Company NMLS 2551, NMLS 2320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender. Dave, you know, I've practiced saying NMLS. NMLS. And I say it like a word now, NMLS, so I can say it.
You ought to hear me say it.
Well, no, I heard you say, and you're the reason I did, because I know since Craig's become a sponsor, I missed one podcast because I had an obligation. And I was driving, and I was thinking that you guys were doing the podcast, and I heard somebody doing an ad on the radio, and they were doing it about a banking company, and they had said NMLS, and I was listening to him how well he said it, and he said it like a word, NMLS. So I have practice saying NMLS so I can not butcher that.
That's all right. You ought to hear me sing my ABCs as well, too, when I get to Elemental P.
Elemental P, right? Exactly.
Sounds like a word when I say it. Let's see here. Landry Jones, you know, this is anything but a meaningless start for him with free agency right around the corner. You know, I know a lot of people want to see Zach Mettenberger in this game. What do you think the chances of that happening, you know, are? You know, there's been some people, I guess some reports out there that Mettenberger's still kind of behind the eight ball, if you will, you know, as far as practices go. So, I mean, he's obviously probably Mettenberger probably going to get some work in practice, more work in practice than he's gotten since the game against prior to the game against the Patriots. Where do you try to draw the line there?
This is Landry Jones's game. He's going to, in my view, he'll play the whole game. If it's a blowout one way or another, maybe Zach gets some snaps, but get Landry Jones as many reps as you can. You don't know if you're going to need him. We've seen, you know, we saw what happened to Carr and Mariota just, you know, a week ago. We saw what happened. You know, we saw Ben get knocked out of the Bengals game for a moment last year and have to come back in. So, Zach, for me, it's, you know, Zach's like Landry Jones when Ben's playing. It's Landry Jones's game, and if it's a situation where it's 31-3 or something like that, and you want to give Zach a series, great. But it's Landry Jones' game, and I'm sure he's prepped and ready to go, and I'm sure he's excited about it. And we can talk about not having Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown as these guys, but look, B.J. Finney's been great when he's had an opportunity, as we toss around the word great. And the young guys want the opportunities. I loved what Eli Rogers and DeMarcus Ayers said about, you know, wanting to play in this game. D'Angelo Williams, I would think, would get to play, you know, share time with Fit Toussaint and get some options. So, you know, I still expect the Steelers to go out and win this game because you're going to have most of your defensive guys out there. And the guys who haven't played are going to want to put good stuff on tape. So I'm excited, Dave. I'm excited to watch it, not quite the same way as the fourth exhibition game or the third exhibition game to see these other guys. But I'm looking forward to this game just as much, maybe not just as much as a normal game because there's no impact on the standings, but I'm looking forward to watching these guys play.
Yeah, if we can keep thinking of more reasons like the punt return situations and Landry Jones and you know, as we mentioned, some of these young guys, Johnny Maxey's going to get a lot of burn in this game. LT Walton going to get some burn. Daniel McCullough is going to get some burn. It's almost like a one step up from a preseason game, if you will. You know, so yeah, I mean, I'm not going to miss it. That's for sure. I doubt we'll write a whole heck of a lot about it, you know, after it's over there. And hopefully, obviously, we're not writing or talking about injuries in this one as well. And the Browns injury report is now out for Wednesday, and it's like 14 or 15 people long here. Not practicing for the Browns, Caldwell, their defensive back, Robert Griffin III with a concussion. Joe Hayden with that neck and groin. Boy, you got a neck and a groin injury. He's probably going to sit. Johnson and Johnson, the running back and linebacker, did not practice. And Joe Thomas had his usual day off on Wednesday with a knee. And like I said, there's about, you know, look, 10, 12 guys on their injury report. Just announced by the Steelers that Le'Veon Bell was voted the team MVP.
Excellent choice, and it was pretty much a no-brainer. It wasn't Ben's best. You know, the ironic thing in this, and just looking back, now each year you might just look at it and say they made the right choice, or maybe they didn't. But looking back, the ironic thing, obviously, Dave, is during Ben's career, he's only won this one time. In the last 4 years, it's been A.B., Le'Veon, A.B., Le'Veon. And it's, you know, it's hard to argue with those guys how good they've been. Now, obviously, for A.B. to get the ball, Ben's got to throw it to him. And that's some of the situation with Le'Veon. But this, to me, was pretty much a no-brainer. Le'Veon Bell was clearly the team MVP.
Yeah, I agree. And boy, can you imagine had he played in all you know, in every game this season?
I really think it'd be neck and neck with Rodgers. And if Brady had played every game, he'd probably be the clear-cut league MVP. But if Le'Veon had played every game, he would. I really think the conversation would be, you know, the three quarterbacks in Le'Veon Bell. For sure. I mean, really, a real – if he broke the yards from scrimmage 25-09, if he broke that record, it might be hard not to give it to him.
Let's see, over 1,200 yards rushing, 7 touchdowns, 616 yards receiving, 75 receptions, and not even playing a full season there. You know, he probably could have pushed for what, 90? Maybe a little more than that receptions had he played the full 15 games there. Yeah, I think it's the right choice as well too, and that's not taking anything away from Antonio Brown there, but just just an amazing season coming back. You know, that you see some of these cuts that he's made, especially, boy, that 5-yard run that he had in the game against the Ravens.
Yeah, it's a nice gif you put up there. But by the way, you know, obviously I don't need to endorse. Dave needs no endorsement from me. but obviously these guys, another record month at Steelers Depot. I know Dave appreciates all of you guys getting to the site, but the gifts and the work they do, I can't say enough about, you know, what I learned. Just, you know, I do this for a living. I'm there every day reading the stuff Dave writes and Alex and Matthew and the rest of the guys. I don't want to leave anybody out. But the gifts they put up and the breakdowns, just being able, you know, I watch the All 22 and I go back and watch the game a couple times. But, you know, just seeing the gifts, seeing things that I missed or I might not have focused on, the breakdowns are fantastic. So that was a great one you put up on that 5-yard run. And I remember thinking at the time exactly what you said, Dave.
Well, I appreciate that. But I tell you, the fun thing about what I do is as many times as I try to watch a game afterwards, when Matthew submits his work for some of the film room sessions or Alex posts, you know, something related to that, I have to cut up all of Matthew's gifts for his posts and all like that. So it forces you to go back in and look at maybe a particular player. You know, I might have been looking at a play and looking at one player, and then Matthew writes something about the same play but a different player. And that's the beauty about having the guys doing, you know, more than just me, if you will, doing what they do, because I learned something as well too. And I've had some Twitter followers countless times say, hey, what about this? And then you go back and you watch it again and you say, aha, that's the beauty of this All 22. And I cannot recommend enough for people that listen, if you don't already subscribe to it and you have time and the money to do so, you got to get that, because even during the off season, I'll go back through all these games again and I'll find stuff that I still miss. And, you know, we're all trying to learn. We obviously don't know exactly what is called on every play, but if you follow the Steelers long enough and, you know, with the coordinators that they have and the defense that they run, you start to pick up and kind of know, you know, what people should be doing on most of the plays there. So it's the best part of my job for sure.
Mary Kay Cabot, who everybody probably is aware, is forever a beat writer covering the Browns, just tweeted out that Hugh Jackson said starters at new positions this game, quote unquote, can happen. Wants to evaluate guys for the future. On the Browns, and I'm 1-14. They will absolutely be professionals and try and win the game. But if I'm Hugh Jackson, that's absolutely what I'm doing. I don't need to watch Joe Thomas play left tackle the entire game. If he wants to play, he can play the entire game. But if I say, Joe, you know, we want to look at some guys, you know, we'll start you as always and have you play the first half and look at some guys. Is that okay with you? And I would absolutely present it that way to Joe Thomas or to Joe Hayden. Other guys I would just tell. But if it's Joe Thomas and Joe Hayden, I'd let them make their own decision. But that's what the Browns should do. And, you know, in any team that's playing this week that's not in the playoffs, it's in their best interest to lose. I don't think anybody goes out and doesn't give 100%. But if you're a Browns fan, you're probably not looking for your team to win this game and the Niners lose so that you can possibly not have the first pick. Doesn't mean, you know, who knows what they do with it, if they go Myles Garrett or if they move out of it and trade back and get more picks. But, you know, Browns fans are in an interesting spot here. You'd love to beat the Steelers to say you beat the Steelers, but really, if you're looking at your best interest down the road, you don't want to win this game.
Yeah, Browns fans are hoping the Steelers don't beat the Steelers.
You're right.
This one won't be nationally televised for sure. And it makes sense what the Browns are going to do. Thoughts on, right now it looks like the Steelers, as we sit here today, will host the Miami Dolphins. Of course, that could change depending on what happens. The Patriots obviously have something to play for still. They play the Dolphins this weekend. The Raiders are still battling for that number two seed. The Chiefs.
Not number one seed. Either.
I mean, number one seed and with the two seed possibly in the balance as well, too. The Chiefs are obviously still, you know, trying to improve what they do. But if you're a betting man, you're betting Steelers host the Dolphins, and boy, the Dolphins took a big shot, another shot this past weekend in their game, because they lost another one of their starting safeties as well too. So people already remember they lost Rashad Jones earlier in the season.
Didn't they lose him in the Steeler game?
Yeah,
that was the game he got hurt.
Absolutely, and now they've lost Issa Abdul Kiedis to what was it, a neck and shoulder or something injury there. So they are very, very beat up in the secondary. So it might be worth kind of watching to see how young safeties Michael Thomas and Bakari Rambo play against the Patriots this week. And oh yeah, you know, we don't know what's going to happen with Ryan Tannehill. I know there's some reports out there that he might be deemed healthy enough to play in the first round of the playoffs. But even if he does, you'd have to think his mobility outside of the pocket would surely be limited. And of course, if he doesn't start, your guy Matt Moore will get the start in that game. And they've already lost Pouncey, you know, at center there. So not only will this be a different venue this time around for Steelers Dolphins, assuming that happens, you know, quite different lineup. And as we talked about as well too, this is a little bit different Steelers defense. And I know I kind of saw, I think you posted up and people need to know, we haven't talked about this ahead of time. What was your reasoning on Twitter, I think it was yesterday or the day before, posting the 2015 defensive stats versus the 2016 defensive stats?
Yeah, I was sitting around on Monday night watching Dallas and Detroit, kind of one eye on that, and it got a little bit out of hand. And so I was just kind of looking back at some of the numbers, doing some research for the playoff game and for the Steelers season defensively. And I just started to look at the numbers, and I like to compare things and see where they were, because we know the sack totals are down both on the offensive line. It's almost cut in half. I think it was 33 or 34 last year, and it was 17 this year. Defensively, we know it was 48 last year, three a game, and it's only been 34 this year. There's another game to go, obviously, with the Browns, where they sacked them seven times. But I wanted to see the other numbers, and I was shocked. Maybe that's too strong a word. I was struck by the fact at how similar the defensive numbers were from last year to this year. Almost identical. Points per game, 20.2 to 19.9. Yards per game, actually 20 less this year, 336 versus 356. But as Dave and I like to talk about, yards per play is the metric that you really want to look at as the fundamental source of being a good defense. And it's 5.5 this year versus 5.4 last year. Some of the other metrics were incredibly similar, and I guess, Dave, the question I didn't have an agenda putting it up there. Sack percentage was down a little bit this year versus last year. I had one or two other things up there that are not coming to me just off the top of my head, but I'll just ask the question: Do we feel like, have we talked ourselves into, or do we feel like this year's defense is better than last year's, because we think, and I don't have the numbers for the second half of the year versus the first half, but do we think that the numbers show that this year's defense is better in the second half and has improved, so we think it's better than last year?
Because I had a feeling you were going to answer the way that you did, and you don't have to be probably a rocket surgeon to kind of figure out which way you were probably headed with that. I went ahead and started looking at some numbers on that, and you are exactly right. I mean, the numbers, if you look across the board, 15, you know, and not even so much the season ending numbers, but looking at 2015 through 15 games versus 2016 through 15 games, there really are quite similar in, you know, some of the key areas. I mean, I looking at it now, in 2015 through 15 games, they allowed a 64, I believe, I can't read some of my own work here, that's not surprising, 64% completion percentage. And this year they've allowed 64.3% completion percentage. Now, I think they have allowed even more passing yards this year through 15 games. I think 700 to be exact. Zach, boy, I hope I have this categorized right here as well through 15 games. But you know, in short, you are right. These numbers are very similar, and if you were just to look at these stats through 15 games and not know anything else, you'd say, man, has this defense really improved? Well, here's what I did. I went back and looked at their previous or their first few games versus the final few games that they had, and I think that's the way you have to look at this. Has this defense improved over the course of, let's say, their last 6 games? And the obvious answer is yes. And I'm going to use my adjusted net yards per passing attempt stat here. Last year, in those games, it was 6.64 was the average yards per passing attempt number in those final games. This year it is, what is it here, 4.07. Okay, so you really have to look at this defense as to where they're going, as to not where they've been. They have made a lot of improvements, obviously in the sack category, starting with the game against Cleveland, and continuing, you know, on through versus, I believe, their what was it there? Their sacks last year, 19 for 130 yards in their final 6 games in 2015 versus, you know, 21 this year. I think the big number here is 13 touchdowns allowed in the final 6 games last year versus 7 in the previous 6 this year here. So they're trending in the right direction. So like you pointed out, you could look at these numbers across the board versus last year and this year and say, man, it doesn't really look like they've improved much. But the fact of the matter is that they have, and they are trending in the right direction. And I didn't have time. I wanted to look at if the Steelers had the lowest adjusted net yards per passing attempt number over the course of the league over the course of the last 6 weeks of the season here. And I didn't have time to do that, but if they don't, they're right up there, because 4.07 is absolutely a fantastic number.
The other thing I was looking at was third down conversions. But yeah, so it's interesting to look at. And, you know, again, I pointed this out a couple times over the course of the season, that schedule sequencing for the Steelers has made it by coincidence that the second half of their schedule has looked a little easier than we anticipated. And the first half was a little harder than we anticipated. The Steelers took care of the Chiefs in that first half of the schedule, but they played an Eagles team that was, at the time, looked very good. They got the Dolphins as they were starting to uptick, and I think a lot of Steeler fans, myself included, thought they would win those games. They get the Bengals late when they're kind of down. The Ravens haven't been quite as good as maybe they have been. Maybe they've been as good as we expected, but obviously they get the Browns twice when it doesn't matter. So some of the numbers, you know, would normally trend that way. But let me just ask you, Dave, I mean, it's hard to remember season to season and exactly what we thought at the time without going back and listening to the podcast or going back and reading some of the things we've written. But I think we're much more I'll say what I think. I am much more optimistic about this Steelers defense. I think going into next season, if they're healthy with Hayward and Tuitt and obviously Hargrave, and the fact that now LT Walton shows that maybe he's an NFL caliber player, and you know, if they have Ricardo Matthews or whomever else they have, you know, Johnny Maxey on that D line, they have a little more depth than I anticipated. I thought first second round they would have to go D line. Maybe they don't have to do that. With what we've seen from Shazier staying healthy and Bud Dupree, and then knowing that the secondary, they're going to get all 9 guys back. They're going to get 9 guys back now. Shabazz is back in the mix as he's waivers. They're going to have Senquez Golson. I think the outlook for this defense of being a potentially dominant defense, if they can add a player or two, and we're obviously talking about an edge rusher, and those aren't easy to find, so I'm not making it a given. But if they can add a dominant player, this can be a dominant defense.
Well, look, this defense has improved over the course of this season a lot more than I thought they would. So, you know, credit to the way Artie Burns, Sean Davis, and Hargrave have all developed. And on top of that, you know, the depth is playing a little bit better as well too. You know, LT Walton last year, you know, in his few snaps that he received, especially in the game against the Kansas City Chiefs, bless you, against the Kansas City Chiefs, you're thinking, man, this guy is on the ground a lot. You wonder. I mean, he didn't even look like he knew where to line up, you know, a few times there. Daniel McCullers, even though I still think, you know, I don't think Daniel McCullers is a long-term guy. You know, we saw a couple of things in the game against the Ravens that, you know, both good and bad. But you'll see some things with Walton over the last couple of games that give you thoughts that he's going to – look, we already know Cameron Hayward and Stephon Tuitt are studs. Javon Hargrave, it's hard to imagine that he's not going to get even better than what he's shown that he's been. Sean Davis is – and if it was up to me, I'd give Sean Davis the – David, that pass breakup on that play to – who was it, Waller in the end zone? When Flacco threw that football, I thought that was six right there, and Sean Davis was able to get his hand up in.
Hey, remind me of the play. I'm having trouble remembering.
The one towards the right sideline there.
Oh yeah, no, I thought it was a touchdown.
I thought it was too, and really didn't. I think I was tweeting or something at the time, a replay and all like that. Never really realized how good a play Sean Davis made until actually going back through the tape and rewatching that thing. I mean, that's – you want to talk –
Definitely got his hand in there, and he made that play.
You want to talk about the defensive play of that game, that was probably it, you know, because, I mean –
I'm trying to remember what followed sequentially, because I thought – I will tell you, I thought that was game over. What happened after that? Did they kick a field goal?
They did kick a field goal, right? I'll find it for you.
So it was a 4-point play.
Let's see. That was the field goal followed immediately after that because it was third down and 3 on the Steelers 4. There was 14:27 left. They would have taken a 20. Let's see. They kicked a field goal to make it 20-10, so they would have been up 24-10 had Waller caught that and Sean Davis not defended it.
Yeah, so massive play. That's really, right. You know, we haven't talked about that at all. That you're right to point that out.
And then, of course, the ensuing possession, the Steelers go down and get the get the touchdown by. I mean, that really sparked a lot right there. So yeah, and. You know, and that came after, you know, you want to talk about making a defensive stand after your quarterback has just thrown another second interception and put you on the short field. That three and out right there, circle that one for sure. And especially that play by Sean Davis. But back to your original kind of question statement there, dominant defense moving forward. Well, you know, they're fine. They're going to be fine at inside linebacker, one would think. I think Timmons is coming back for however many years at whatever many however many dollars. Shazier's obviously going to be around. You're fine up front. Your secondary, I mean, like we said in the previous podcast, even if Cinquez Golson only gives you special team stuff at this point, you know, you got to be thankful, but you got to know that they're looking at him to be a slot guy for you and potentially relieving William Gay of that duty. Burns is obviously going to be around. I don't think Cockrell's going anywhere just yet, but you would obviously like to and think that somebody could come in and challenge him at least on the outside. So now we're back to what we talked about since the beginning of the year, edge rushers. And, you know, while I think the market will be too rich dollar amount wise for them to go out and add a big name guy in free agency for an edge rusher, you know, if let's say James Harrison comes back and can give you some time while you develop a guy that you draft in the first round, maybe this has a potential makings of being what is a dominant defense in today's NFL?
Well, a dominant defense today would be the Broncos pass defense and the Ravens run defense. I mean, that if you you know, I don't know if the Steelers will have the luxury to try to find nobody's going to find a Brandon Williams. Brandon Williams is some kind of combination between Javon Hargrave and Casey Hampton. I mean, he's big like Casey and he's quick like Javon. Those guys don't grow on trees. But I don't know if Javon Hargrave is the guy. I don't know, Dave. I just wonder, when you think of Javon Hargrave, you don't think of him as a zero, right? A pure nose. Do you think of him as a three and a five technique guy more than a guy of the Casey Hampton type?
No, I think him as a one two or three.
Yeah, I think of him as a three, maybe not a five, but I just think of him as a three. So he can
cause havoc at that slanted. That slanted one, when he lines up at the two as well too. I mean, go back and just watch this game against the Ravens in base situations there when he's on the field in those situations. Now, obviously, when he's in there in nickel, he moves on down a little bit there, but I don't think he's a guy I want to throw out there constantly as a four and a five, you know. But interior wise, he can move. He can give you snaps up and down that line. But I really think where his impact is going to be made, moving forward is, of course, in a few snaps that he's going to get in the base. And then as a nickel guy, on down the line a little bit.
So the answer is a dominant defense is there's not one in the NFL this year. Denver and Seattle have been those types of defenses. I was reading the yards per play numbers from the teams last year, and as you might guess, it went Denver 1, Super Bowl champs. I think Seattle was 2, NFC title game. New England was 3, Super Bowl losers. Carolina was 4. Super Bowl losers. New England was obviously AFC division championship losers. Carolina was 3 or 4, and New England was 4, 3 or 4. And you go through and it was the best stat for last year to determine who the best teams were. And this year, one of the things we've talked about a lot in Football Outsiders, their DVOA rankings talk about how there are very few balanced teams, and the balanced teams in the NFL this year are teams like the Steelers and the Chiefs. Whereas you look at the rest of them and they have dominant units and then okay units on the other side. And you look at the Falcons, the best offense in the NFL, an average, average or below average defense. The same is true of the Patriots. You go through and the Steelers, as we've talked about a couple times over the course of the season, the Steelers are the one team that is most balanced. And in terms of having two units that are ranked inside the top 10, and this week's rankings came out last night, and the Steelers are the third ranked team in the NFL right now, and they're ranked 9th offensively and 9th defensively, which is around where they've been. But Dallas is 2nd offensively, 18 defensively. New England's 3rd offensively, 16 defensively. Atlanta 1 and 27. The Packers are 6 and 19. The Chiefs are the only one that's close. They're 13 and 12. But all these teams, their offenses are prime, and their defenses aren't. The Steelers' defense is higher ranked than basically every team that's going to be in the playoffs, except for Seattle's 4 and the Giants are 2. So something to think about. The Miami, just for illustrative purposes, Miami's offense checks in at 14 and their defense at 17. So, I think there's room for this offense to improve. You get, if they bring Martavis Bryant back and you have Ladarius Green for a whole year, you figure out Sammy Coates and what the second wide receiver thing, that could be potent as hell. And the defense, should get better with experience. So things are looking up for the Steelers right now.
Yeah, and I think if you talk about this year's defense right now, where they're at, a couple things come to mind. You'd like to see the tackling just get better. plain and simple, more consistent on a game-to-game basis, not one game. All right, tackling was good here, and then, you know, you missed 17 in say, the game against the Buffalo Bills, and, of course, they missed, you know, a handful, more than their fair share, let's just say, in the game against the Ravens. So, obviously, tackling is an issue more so than scheme in that area. And then, you know, you would just like to see this defense be able to finish more consistently in tight games. You know, they allowed the Ravens to kind of paper cut them to death in that final series that they had. The go back to the game against the Cowboys, where some unfortunate penalties played a role in that as well too. But you know, getting a stop when when Double Renegade is played, you know, that kind of thing. Now, we already pointed out that they made they got a key three and out in that game against the Ravens after Roethlisberger turned the football over a second time there, and that's what you need. I think you'd like to see a little bit more dominant performance maybe at the start of games, talking about some three and outs and you know, turnovers. You can't really, even though you don't know when the turnovers are going to come or when they're going to come, but boy, you sure would like to be able to see them set up the offense with a couple of short fields. It seems like it's been since the KC game, correct me if I'm wrong, and I'm obviously probably missing something in there, but it hasn't happened a lot where the defense has provided a short field for the offense.
Correct. And the Kansas, I missed what you said. You cut out there up for me in a second, but the Kansas City game is the one that impacted the game the most, I think, with a couple short fields early. Okay, Dave, we're kind of pushing up against an hour here. Remember, mortgage process sometimes can be challenging, more challenging than spelling Roethlisberger. Our buddy Craig Oxane can guide you through this sometimes daunting process to help you score the home of your dreams, even in Cleveland. If you're considering buying or refinancing a home now or in the future, please give Craig a call. He's an experienced, nationally recognized lender that can help you achieve your dream of home ownership. Call Craig Oxane today at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. Email Craig at blackandgoldlending.com or apply online at www.blackandgoldlending.com. First Advantage Mortgage Company, NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender. We didn't get to much stuff around the NFL, but obviously the Cowboys looked great on Monday night, defeating the Lions, and I probably haven't given them their due. I've been thinking the most dangerous teams in the NFC were Green Bay and Atlanta. Obviously, Dallas needs to be in that conversation, Dave. And so there are a couple games that mattered, none in the AFC per se, but Steeler fans should be rooting for the Patriots over the Dolphins. And then I think rooting for Oakland to go to Denver and win that game. I'd rather see the Steelers go to Oakland if they win rather than going to Arrowhead.
Yeah, I agree with you. Let's tackle a quick few questions from listeners here, David, real quick. Let's see here. We got Rich writes in, says there's some volume levels on the podcast. Rich, we're working on it, brother. I plan on, after this season's over, to get a PhD in how to mix some of this stuff there. So please bear with us. I'm recording this one in stereo today to see if I can adjust those levels a little bit better. So appreciate the email there. An email from Cal Stern from Gustavsburg, Sweden. David, they listen to us in Sweden. He wants to know what if Todd Haley leaves for a head coaching job? Who do we see as his replacement? A promotion from within the organization and continue with the style play and that kind of stuff. Look, Randy Feitner would be my first choice, obviously. But I don't know what the organization thinks of Randy Feitner, who's currently the quarterback's coach. My hope is that we wouldn't have to go through a significant change with an offensive coordinator should Todd Haley leave. David, I would think that you probably agree with me that Randy Feitner would probably be the most obvious choice from inside the
league. Yeah, I love Randy. I wonder if Munch would be a guy that they would, you know, a guy who's had, you know, very senior roles, obviously having been a head coach, if he would be more in line for that role. Don't know the answer. I don't think Todd Haley's going to get a head coaching job anywhere. So I don't think it'll be the issue, but that's an interesting question. Dave, I think those would be the two guys. I mean, those are the two guys. There's not, it's not going to be anybody else internally. So interesting thought.
Travis Herko, and thanks for that that great email from Sweden there. Travis Herko writes in, looking at the situation with Ladarius Green and a deal he signed, roughly $5,000 a year, and Cortez Allen and the contract he signed, roughly $6.15 million a year, and removing the playing abilities and skill level of each player, are we possibly looking at another situation of paying a substantial amount for a player that, due to injury and setbacks, will not see the field frequently enough to justify the contract, leading to another dead money hit? I know Cortez cost us 4.05 in dead money this season. Are we running the risk of seeing something happen with Ladarius? All I'll tell you with Ladarius is the way you should look at Ladarius' situation right now is the signing bonus that he received, which was less than $5 million. Okay, so don't look at it at what he's roughly standing to make. Just look at the signing bonus and you know, the thing with Ladarius that David and I already hit on earlier in the show, before we just permanently attach this injury tag and a bad signing tag to Ladarius, let's see where we stand, you know, 8 games into the 2017 season. For all we know, and David made a good point that he was listed as doubtful on the injury report last week, he's probably not going to play for obvious reasons against the Browns there. But look, you had to sign somebody to fill or try to absorb what you were losing with a guy like Keith Miller. You wanted a guy, you know, people been wanting a stretch to field tight end for several years now. You got him. You got him at a really fair price. I still think, even though he missed half of the season here,
he's been worth every penny for this year.
Yeah, I agree. And that's where I'm going with that, Travis. So I wouldn't get, look, he's not going anywhere during the off season. I don't think we're sitting here talking about any time during the off season about Ladarius Green potentially being any type of a cut here, but we appreciate the comment. Let's see. We got another one. I don't want to spend too much time on, had a Tampa from Edward Cummings, Tampa 2 debacle. He is wondering if you guys broke down how many big plays or TDs Tampa 2 coverage has given up this season. Timmons was the whole guy earlier in the season. Now at Shazier, no matter who's playing that spot, it's a tough spot for a middle linebacker to play. People rarely run Tampa 2 nowadays. Please respond to that on the show. Look, Kayser, and you saw Shazier, I think, what, twice in that game, probably deserving to get beat. He got beat on one of them, right, for a touchdown there. And the other one was a throw that Flacco probably should have made to, I think it was Pitta, on one of those. You know, when you run those blitzes and on that touchdown, I think it was a play where Mike Mitchell was going over the top to the other direction. You know, those are plays that are designed to kind of beat the middle of the field in those situations. Sometimes you're going to make them, sometimes you're not. And in the situation with Shazier, I think I said in the podcast the other day that, look, we talk all the time about Timmons getting beat or almost getting beat. You know, Shazier had the same thing happen to him in this game against the Ravens as well, too. Sometimes you get caught up in an island and the other team is schemed to catch you in that where you're left with a middle running back or with a middle linebacker running with somebody that's a mismatch. And, you know, that's just the breaks. I don't think that we can sit here and say that we see the Steelers use a lot of Tampa too, though. So, you know, sometimes you got to take your hat off and hand it to the offense as well.
All right, we've covered it. It's time for Pitt playing in the Pinstripe Bowl. We got to get moving, and we'll be back on Friday and have our picks, and we'll talk a little bit about the tactics, the X's and O's of the Week 17 game. But it's fun. It's fun to be kneeling on the Bengals 2-yard line or 4-yard line like the Steelers did a week ago, and it's fun for us doing a podcast on Wednesday and Friday when the outcome is not significant.
Yeah, we can. You can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. Let me know if this podcast sounds better if you want to fire off an email. You can make a donation to the show by going to SteelersDepot.com and hitting that donate button in the upper right navigational bar. Thank you, thank you, thank you for everybody who has done so so far, and we'll be back on Friday again.
As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.